The recording has now been started. Please go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Hello, everyone. This is meeting number 47 of the CWG IANA stewardship. It's 14th of May today. Is there anyone that's not in Adobe Connect and only on the phone line for the moment?
Yeah, this is Avery. I'm not on the Adobe Connect yet. I'm not sure I'll get on it. Thanks.
Thanks, Avery. We'll report your attendance. Anyone else?
Greg Shatton. I'll be in Adobe Connect eventually.
Thanks, Greg. I think that's all, so I'll hand it over to Jonathan and Lisa to chair this meeting.
Thanks, Marika. It's Jonathan Robinson speaking. Welcome, everyone, in particular those that have had to get up very early or at some odd hour for this meeting, and or who have had to join us when it's a national vacation. We have a lot to deal with in this meeting, and I think we can make some really productive progress. I'm a little worried about the turnout, so it may be that we have to deal with some of these items.
This is Josh from
today that we'll have to deal with at a subsequent meeting as well next week. Let's see how we get on. Thanks for joining us, the Sidley people. It's great to have you, and Sharon, I know it's really early for you, but I think your memos have provided some really important information for us, and I look forward to discussing those under item three. A couple of other brief remarks in the interim, and I think we'll get going straight away. We do have a form of timetable for you to talk about later in the agenda. It isn't as well populated as I'd like. We've got to do some more work on there and detailing that out, but we'll talk to you about that, and I think Lisa will lead you through that later. We've continued the coordination work with the CRISP team and had a productive meeting with them earlier this week, just starting to understand what they may what might be submitted in relation to our work via the public comment. And assisting them with clarifying their understanding of the proposal as they start to prepare that work. Right, let's get straight on with the agenda, unless there are any questions or issues relating to the structure or content of the agenda. Okay, so obviously we have under item two a public comment period underway, and there is a series of public comments being generated. I don't see Bernie on the call. Sorry, Bernie. I do see you there. Thanks. Bernie, I know you put out, you've been working on a form of summary of the comments, and we shared that format, I think, the other day. Has anything changed since Tuesday on that? Can you just confirm if we still are on this? Same if there's been any additions or changes that have come in the interim. And there that is shared with you the tool, the public comment tool for the rest of the group. And Bernie, my understanding is that you'll continue to populate this as comments come in, and we agreed at the last meeting that staff would prepare an initial draft of the CWG response for the CWG to then review and comment on. Is there an update since Tuesday? Go ahead, Bernie.
Thank you, sir. As far as the form is concerned, I don't think we have had any significant comments, so we're working on it and looking forward to have a draft on some of the points next week, and there have been a few additional comments since our last meeting of the CWG, including one from AUDA. That's my report, sir. Thank you.
Thanks, Bernie. So to confirm, we can expect to see this form populated with the comments to date, plus perhaps some of the draft responses prepared by staff to assist the CWG at the Tuesday 19th call?
That is correct, as far as I'm aware.
Thanks, Bernie. Okay, I'm not going to dwell on this then unless anyone has any comments on this. There is something else that Bernie helped us with, and that is the FAQs. Now, as you know, we published one set of FAQs that were really a very focused and specific set of FAQs that were at the answers to which were derived from the Sidley memo. That's not what you see in front of you at the screen on the screen now. And that's linked to from the public comment site. And we specifically provided a set of key responses to FAQs that we anticipated in and around the PTI and the legal legally separate PTI. Here you have in front of you a collation of the responses to the questions that we received during the two webinars and two subsequent webinars with dealt with Q&A that are responses by the chairs to those Q&As, and then they've been pulled together as per Bernie's covering note into a set of FAQs. My idea and our intention that we discussed was to publish these FAQs very shortly, such that they were useful to inform public comment. Having reviewed them and looked at them, I don't feel particularly comfortable publishing them. There are some answers that I agree with completely, some answers I think could do with polishing and further work. They essentially represent off-the-cuff answers to questions asked in the webinars. So on the basis of a few factors, really, probably three. One, where we are in terms of timing in the public comment period. Two, the further time it would take us to refine these. And three, the likelihood of public commenters actually referring to these. My latest position that I discussed together with Lisa this morning is that we should probably hold off from publishing these FAQs. They may be very useful as an ongoing discussion document within the CWG, and potentially something we could work up towards publishing as part of an FAQ support to our final publication, which we propose to publish, that 2 weeks or so before the Buenos Aires meeting. So it feels to me like that's the direction of where this document should go to, rather than be made rushed into publication now, where it may not receive adequate attention, and there's a risk that the answers aren't sufficiently well considered, that they could cause potentially more harm than good. Thanks, Milton. I see you have some support for that thinking in the chat. Would anyone else like to comment on the usefulness or otherwise of these FAQs? I realize it's a 12-page document. You may or not have had chance. And I see Eduardo is also recognizes or highlights that we're very close to the public comment deadline. So, Eduardo, clearly the thinking was that in publishing these, they would potentially inform those that were still midway through preparation of public comments. But as I say, and as you seem to agree, not only are we late in the process, these answers also, I don't feel, have been given a proper airing in front of the group, and they could be subject to further discussion. So sort of tracking a little bit what's going on in the chat, I'm not seeing any advocacy for these actually being published now, and there are some support for issues or concerns that it may raise. So I would encourage you all to read through these, and nevertheless, I wonder, perhaps staff, we need to put this online. It's possible we could put this online as a dynamically editable document, but in any event, I'd encourage you to look through it, and if there's anything... I mean, if there's a word or two wrong, these were answers given spontaneously to questions during the webinars. I'm less worried about sort of less material points, although feel free to flag anything, of course. But if you feel something is substantially misrepresented or you have real concerns over the chair's interpretation or response in response to these questions, and that doesn't accord with your understanding of where this group is at, I think we need to have that discussion. So So I'd really encourage all of you to read through these. I don't think it's been a waste of time to prepare them. And as I say, they may well end up being FAQs that we publish alongside our final document. I just feel uncomfortable rushing them into publication right now. Thanks. I note a couple of other comments from Brendan and Greg indicating essentially support for that approach, as does Martin Boyle. So thanks for that. I won't dwell on it then, and I think we have a way forward there. So perhaps it's worth capturing that, which you've sort of done anyway, Marika, as continue to review AQs, perhaps post on the wiki page, as you've said, continue to review FAQs and consider publishing as part of final proposal. Supporting documents. All right, good. Well, I'm going to keep us ticking over because I think we've got more than enough to talk about in other areas of the agenda. And it seems to me that under item three, we now have an opportunity for an update from Sidley. The client committee, on the basis of discussions with the group as a whole, instructed Sidley to undertake two key pieces of work. And I think we should deal with them in this order. I suggest we deal with them in this order unless Sidley feels otherwise. The first was to look at a series of stress tests, if you like, and examine how the post-transition entity stood up to, and in particular thinking about the legal structure, a public benefit corporation versus an LLC, stood up to various post-transition scenarios. And then the second was to look at the nature of the second was to look at actually in detail the public benefit corporation versus the LLC. So it's more board and then LLC. And it feels to me like it really makes sense to look at my reading of these memos, and I won't anticipate anything other than this, was that Sidley were fairly unequivocal on the first point, on the second. So I'd very much like Sidley to talk us through those two memos, the key points, and any points they would specifically like to highlight, and then run a Q&A on those in order to inform the group on our decisions, in particular on the post-transition IANA board issues and nature of the corporation and any other related points. So I'm not sure who from Sidley is willing or able to do this, but I'd like to invite you now to talk us through Memo 1 and then Memo 2. I'm calling Memo 1 the one that deals with the post-transition IANA board stress test.
Hi, Jonathan. This is Sharon. I've lost my ability to raise my hand right now, but I can speak to both memos.
Thank you, Sharon. Please go ahead, and it'd be great to hear from you on one, and then possibly we'll do Q&A on that and then move to the second.
Okay. So I'll start with the stress test memo. And I know we circulated that yesterday, but I'm not sure if everyone has had full time to review, so I'm happy to kind of walk through it at a high level and just recap as well. So what we looked at is we were looking at the way to structure the PTI board, whether it would be a so-called insider board or an outsider board. And just to remind people, when we were saying insider board, what we meant was a board, a PTI board, that was made up of a majority of directors who were employees of ICANN. And those could be the members of ICANN management who are responsible for oversight of the IANA functions. So that would be the insider board. And then there's the outsider board. And the outsider board, when we look at that, what we mean is a PTI board in which a majority of the directors are not employees of ICANN. And who those outside directors could be, they could be interested stakeholders, or they could be totally independent and have no ties to ICANN or the ICANN community. So those were the two structures we looked at. And we had separately engaged before writing this memo and just we just talked internally and just, you know, tried to walk through the scenarios we could think of and how those might play out. And we took an agnostic approach. We really just, you know, talked and walked through it and tried to flesh it out. And I think our conclusion is that in some cases it breaks even. There's no benefit one way or the other. But then in other cases, we felt that the insider board would be more appropriate or would fit better for the types of stress tests that we were looking at. And I can walk through them. But that was primarily because, I think, for two reasons. One is because the best way to hold ICANN accountable, and we have through the CCWG all of these mechanisms to hold ICANN accountable, and it seemed to us the best way to hold ICANN accountable is to have it have some role in controlling PTI so that the decisions are ultimately can be tracked back to ICANN and ICANN can be held accountable for what's happening at the PTI board level. If you have a totally outsider board or a majority outsider board, in effect, although maybe technically this entity exists within ICANN, in effect it's really external because you've got the control is no longer at ICANN ultimately and there's no real way to hold ICANN accountable. It's really an independent entity. And so as we were looking at these different, you know, say stress tests, we started to see that, at least in our view, it seemed that the outsider board created kind of more issues than it solved for. I see Avery has a hand up, and so I can pause kind of as we go along, or I can just try to walk through the memo in total and then come back for questions. Is Jonathan, you have a preference in terms of how you want to organize this?
Sharon, I don't have a strong feeling. I think if Avery's got a point right now, let's hear it, and we can see how you go. I think.
Okay. Thank you. This is Avery speaking, and I'm in a semi-noisy place, so I'll try not to speak too much. I guess I have a question on that, because we've also talked about there being a contract between ICANN, the parent, and the PTI affiliate. So that's one degree of accountability. There's also the accountability in between the PTI and ICANN owning company in terms of the approval of budgets, that part does not go away. So I don't quite understand. So we have a situation where ICANN, as the owning entity, has all of the accountability that it has to that's being set up by CWG accountability. And then we have the PTI's accountability to the owning company, ICANN, vis-a-vis the contract, vis-a-vis the SLA, and such as that. So I'm not quite sure I understand your point of if it doesn't have an insider board, then there is no accountability. It seems that there's an associative accountability via the contract and the SLA and ICANN, the parent's accountability. Thanks.
Thanks, Avery. That's right. The contract does provide a measure of accountability as between ICANN and PTI, but for the conduct of what's happening at PTI, you know, the contract then, you know, yes, ICANN could sue, and that's one of the stress tests we looked at. ICANN could sue PTI if it were not performing under the contract, but we view that as maybe suboptimal. I mean, lawsuits aren't really the ideal way to solve things, and so in that example, and I can walk through that, but in that example, we thought that it would be easier or more straightforward if you had a PTI board that was connected to ICANN that could, you know, message back and try to address the problems without having to resort to litigation. Litigation would still be possible. And whoever, no matter who is sitting on the PTI board, whether they're ICANN employees or not, those individuals will owe fiduciary duties to the PTI, so they still have to act in the best interest of the PTI. But our view is that there was more of a connection back to ICANN if those insiders were also people at ICANN who were overseeing the contract. So I think, you know, I think we saw that the contract could serve one purpose, but there still needs to be a board making decisions at the PTI level. Alan?
Yeah, just a quick question. When you say ICANN employees, are you, do you mean sort of interchangeably ICANN proper or PTI employees, or are you focusing explicitly on true ICANN employees?
Thanks, Alan. For purposes of this analysis, we're talking about true ICANN employees. You could always still have on the PTI board, you know, the most senior, for example, it would be common to have a CEO or the most senior person at the subsidiary on the board. But what we were focused, when we think of control and the majority, we're focused on ICANN employees.
Thank you. Just wanted clarity on that.
Yep. Okay. Milton? Milton, is that, do you have your hand up?
Milton, you're very faint. We just hear you, but very, very.
Yeah, we still can't hear you.
Only a little. Unfortunately, we don't hear you, Milton, so I'm going to encourage Sharon to go ahead with walking us through the memo, and then we'll come back to you.
Thanks, Jonathan. Okay, so let me walk through the scenarios, and then I think it might be helpful just for me to just go through them and then come back for questions, because I think some of the topics will be covered in the scenarios that we looked at. So the first one we looked at was relatively, you know, straightforward issue of just who has the authority to make decisions about hiring and compensation for the management of the IANA functions team. So the individuals, and this would be the actual PTI employees, the management at PTI. So in either case, that is really a core board function, is the decision-making over hiring and compensation of senior management at an entity. So the PTI board should have that power. As we looked at the two models, the insider board or the outsider board, in the insider board, you would have at the board level, you would have the ICANN senior personnel who are currently overseeing the IANA functions, and so there was, we thought, some logic to those individuals then also having the decision-making over hiring and monitoring the team. They have experience with that. They've already been doing that. If instead you had an outsider board, that board could do the same thing. That board would need to gain experience, wouldn't have that experience, at least initially. And then if there were issues or concerns, those issues are all dealt with exclusively at the PTI level. There's no ability to give feedback through ICANN, because ICANN's not responsible really for this entity anymore if it's a true outsider board. We also looked at a variant of this, which is just what if there was a performance issue at the IANA functions team. So in addition to hiring and compensation, it's also a core board function to make decisions to terminate and replace individuals if there are performance issues. And again, that's, you know, core board function. Similar to the hiring and compensation, the quote insider board, if it were comprised of ICANN personnel responsible for the IANA function oversight, then those people, you know, have experience and arguably would be the logical candidates to determine whether performance is occurring or not. So that's the decision on just individuals. I see in the chats there's reference to IFR, and I agree that would be another check on performance. But this would be more an individual issue, not a systemic issue. There's no issue, you know, for this scenario. They're not talking about their systemic issues happening. It's maybe there's just one person. It's there's just, you know, the things you face in an organization. An individual, for whatever reason, is not doing the job, but others are picking up the slack. So there's not a systemic issue in that example. And systemic issues are dealt with through the IFR, of course. So the second thing we looked at were oversight of the PTI budget. And so, as Avery mentioned earlier, the budget is something that is CCWG dependency. And this group has been clear that, in addition, while the CCWG is looking at overall budget input and having some ability for a membership body or a community to veto the budget, this group has been clear that there's also a need for that to happen, that there be an IANA functions budget in particular rather than just an overall budget. So there is a piece of that that's happening at the ICANN level. But particularly if PTI is a nonprofit corporation, as a statutory matter, the board would still need to approve the budget for PTI. So looking at that scenario, the insider board, our view is that again seemed more of a logical candidate because the ICANN personnel will already be dealing with the budget. They'll already be creating the overall budget, including the IANA piece of it, and that would be subject, as I said, to membership or community input. So that budget will be kind of pre-baked at the ICANN level, and then it should be a matter of simply implementing or approving the aspects of the budget that are PTI specific, but those would already have been fully vetted. So in that scenario, we thought the ICANN insider model made more sense because that process would have already taken place, and really you're just trying to implement what already occurred at the ICANN level with the community input. If it were an outsider board, an outsider board could also be effective in doing that. And but again, we have this issue of the outsider board is not controlled then by ICANN and could do whatever it wants. So it could pick a totally different budget that's not consistent with what has been agreed to at the community level. And there would be ways you could address that. You could put in accountability at the PTI level, but what you've done is you've now created a need to replicate all of the complexity of the ICANN CCWG work at the PTI level and risk potentially conflicting guidance between those two accountability mechanisms. So you don't have one clear place where accountability resides. So for budget right now, it would be at the ICANN level. You would now have two places and potentially some confusion as to who is really in charge of this and who is accountable. I'm just looking at the chat here. Okay, so that's budget. And then let me turn next to number three on our list, which is oversight of the contract itself. So we would have this contract between ICANN and PTI, and how would you deal with, when I say you, PTI, how would PTI deal with a lawsuit by ICANN for a breach of contract? It says, you know, PTI isn't performing under the contract and needs to remedy that breach. If there is an insider board, we view that as a false hypothetical, because there really isn't a scenario or a likely scenario where if the PTI board is majority ICANN, there won't be breaches. I mean, there could be an unintentional breach, but there would be presumably a fairly easy remedy and a clear incentive for it all to get back in line, because it's in effect a parent subsidiary type relationship, and PTI would just, you know, do what needed to be done and would be directed to do so by the board. So we see that as, you know, really a better assurance of PTI not breaching the contract if there is a connection between the two. If there's an outsider board model, and PTI is in breach, then ICANN's only real recourse would be to sue PTI or to pursue some other kind of alternative dispute resolution against PTI, or potentially, if it had retained the power as a member, replace the PTI board with new individuals. So that's the scenario where PTI would breach. What if ICANN breaches? Then what? So in either scenario, either board model, the PTI would have the power to bring suit against ICANN if ICANN were in breach of the contract. In the insider board model, I think as a practical matter, the PTI board may be less likely to bring suit because those people are also employees of ICANN. So the way to address that would have to be through the overall ICANN accountability mechanisms. If ICANN is not behaving or performing under that contract, then there are mechanisms at the ICANN level to say, well, ICANN, you need to do that, and if you don't do that, we're going to pursue the various accountability mechanisms in place that include, for example, a replacement of the board with board members who will ensure that the ICANN staff is complying with that contract. Okay, so that's the contract. The next example or scenario we looked at, number four, is just generally lawsuits, so not ICANN specific, but let's just assume PTI is sued by some other third party, or let's assume PTI has some need to sue a third party. So who would control that litigation, and how would that shake out? In either case, the board should have that responsibility. That is a fairly clear board responsibility. But we don't think one model or the other is better in that scenario. We think both would work equally well. And then number five is the separation of PTI from ICANN. So if there ever were a situation where the IANA function review or whatever the separation process resulted in a recommendation that ICANN divest PTI, what's the best way to ensure that PTI does what it needs to do to separate? Because that will be really important. And just a slight technical point here, it will matter a little bit how the divestiture is structured. If it's simply a transfer by ICANN of its membership interest in PTI, then the PTI board doesn't need to do anything. It just would happen. The owner, ICANN, would make that change. If it were structured in a different way, so if it were structured as an asset sale or if it were a merger, so a combination of PTI with some other new company, then the PTI board, as a statutory matter, would need to approve the separation. Under an insider model, we think the PTI board will be highly motivated to do what is being asked by the community to be done, because ICANN would have a very clear mandate in a fundamental bylaw to allow for the separation should the separation be triggered. The outsider board model, in that situation where the PTI board needs to act, has to exercise its own fiduciary duties and reviewing that, and presumably could conclude that that's not in the best interest of PTI. So if there were an outside board model, then we would need, again, new accountability mechanisms at the level of detail that are occurring at CCWG at the ICANN level would need to be replicated down at the PTI level. And again, some risk that you have conflicting mechanisms that are not working in harmony, and a question of whether there's a benefit from having to replicate all those accountability mechanisms. And then the last item we looked at, number six, is what happens if there is a policy decision at the ICANN level, and ICANN says, yes, we agree, that's what the community wants, that's what we will do, but there is a failure to implement at the PTI level. They just won't do whatever the technical issue, technical item is that needs to be done in order to affect it. What would that look like? Under the insider board model, if ICANN were reluctant to implement, then, again, accountability mechanisms at the ICANN level could be used to ensure implementation. And if ICANN weren't doing that, then the community membership, whatever that body is at the top level, would hold ICANN accountable. Under an outsider board model, the PTI board could also ensure that any directive were implemented. There is a risk, though, if it's a true outsider board, that the PTI board takes an independent view and doesn't agree with the policy decision that's been agreed to at the ICANN level and simply refuses to implement the directive. So we think there's a risk there. Now, it can be addressed, but again, the way to address it is through recreating new accountability mechanisms at the PTI level. Those are the scenarios we looked at, and I see there's been a bunch of chattel. They still haven't mastered your all amazing ability to read and speak at the same time. But so let me pause there. And Jonathan, if there's anything in the chat you think I should address, or if there are other questions, we can talk about those.
Sharon, thank you very much. I think the ability to read and talk and type at the same time means one or more functions are compromised. So I think it's great that you compromised on going through the memo as prepared. And I certainly found it very useful, and it's helpful to have your summary of it. I found it somewhat unequivocal, and to, for my purposes, it's helpful that it has implicit in it, having put things to the stress test as a form of recommendation. There was one point, I guess the critical thing that I would just highlight for me, the thing that struck, and I know you said this very, very clearly, and it's evident throughout, is that by definition, an insider board has a majority ICANN, and an outsider board has a majority outside. That said, an insider board could have influence from others, and one of the things I was thinking about is whether we seek to have as a variant, we don't necessarily invoke upfront, if we went down the route of an insider board, which, as I say, this memo seems to drive us to and reasonably strongly, is that we have the capacity to introduce influence at the board level should we see fit or should it become appropriate in the future. That may open and make it too wide open, but it would still, I think the key point is that an insider has the majority, and if we go down that route, it's not whether there is influence at the board level, it's whether there is power, and the power is in by the insider or the outsider. So by that, I'm wondering whether this accommodates, for example, a suggestion was made some time ago that there is a possibility in the future of introducing board seats for names, numbers, and protocol communities. But if that was the case, we certainly don't have anywhere near agreement to do that at the moment. And it could be that was introduced in such a way that it retained, that didn't tip the balance of power outside while we still retained a non-separate entity or an integrated entity. Okay, there's a couple of hands gone up then. I see from both Sidley has. Josh first, and then Sharon, let's go to you.
Hi. I was going to emphasize or agree with, to clarify what you had pointed up in that comment, Jonathan, that you can, and this has been a thread that seems to have emerged in the chat, when we were talking about an insider board, we were envisioning, you know, at least initially that it be ICANN employees, but as we noted in the beginning of the memo, it could be ICANN could choose to put some independents on, or some people, you know, recommended by one of the SOs or ACs on the board. The key distinction from our perspective is that ICANN controls the designation of a majority of the board members, and then ICANN is directly responsible as a result for controlling the makeup of the board. The majority voting power of the board. So that's how we differentiated between insider versus outsider for purposes of the memo. So you may still be able to allow for some independent voices to be present on the board, but under the ICANN-controlled scenario, ICANN would designate either directly or indirectly, you know, a majority of those members or the board directors. And I did want to agree with the comment that was sort of starting to emerge at the end, that you have a scenario where you have the independent board and you have to, in effect, recreate some of the accountability mechanisms that are imposed on CWG, or CCWG imposes now have to be recreated at the PTI level, or you'd have to increase the reservation of rights by ICANN as a member of PTI in order to bring about the same level of control that is being established directly through the CCWG mechanisms when you have ICANN being the inside board. Sorry, PTI being an inside board. Hi.
Great. Thanks, Josh. Sharon?
Thanks, Jonathan. And I agree with the comment in the chat that when we say ICANN is picking or designating, we mean that indirectly it's probably the ICANN board. Ultimately, it's probably the ICANN board making those decisions. But we could even in the insider model provide guidelines through an ICANN bylaw as to what the composition should look like. So, for example, some of the logic in our memo on why the insider board we thought made sense was because you would have ICANN personnel responsible for IANA oversight on the board. Well, so if people thought that was a good idea, you could actually direct and mandate that, yes, ICANN picks, but ICANN must pick whoever, you know, whether it's the CEO or the whoever's managing that. So you can give ICANN the ability to select, but you can also ring fence that a bit or give guidelines as to what the composition would look like, even as designated by ICANN.
Thanks, Sharon. I'm mindful that we have always got the balance between moving things forward and giving proper discussion, but also trying to make some forward progress in decision-making. So I would suggest that given that the memo is fairly clear in recommending an inside board, we ask two questions, really. One, does anyone have a significant problem with that? And two, if not, assuming not, can we try and build clarifying questions or add to further shape on that in the discussion that we have? For example, along the lines of what we just heard from Sharon now about, which is, you know, the possibility of making some recommendations. So we might recommend, and I've heard this discussed before, something along these lines. I'm not saying this is the exact answer, but the board, and assuming it is an insider board, the board is comprised of, at minimum, the most senior operational employee of the IANA function, plus, for example, the board members, ICANN board members, as put in place on the board by the GNSO and the CCNSO. Now, again, I'm not proposing that as a solution, just giving an ideas about how we might start to, if we're going to put any sort of guidance on this over and above an insider board, those are the kind of things we might want to give guidance on. So we knew that one of the things I looked at when people were talking about this was appropriate qualifications. You know, are all, say, ICANN board members appropriately qualified and relevant to sit on a PTI board? And then there's also been reference to, in some discussions I've seen, to the fact that one of the senior ICANN employees, it happens to be the head of the generic domains division, I think, or whatever it's currently called, Akram Atala, is nominally responsible at a functional level for the operation of the IANA function. So in many ways, you would think Akram was someone you'd want on the board as well, not because of reasons of accountability, responsibility, and operational familiarity. And so those are the kind of things we might think about once we start to think about guidance. Maybe I'll sort of put it to the question. Would anyone like to speak fundamentally against the sort of, in essence, what appears to be the recommendation of this, that we work around and inside a board and start to build up any detail around it, any relevant detail around and inside a board. Chuck, go ahead.
Thanks, Jonathan. Chuck Gomes. I don't know if this responds to your request or not, but as I'm looking through the two memos and listening to the presentation and looking at the chat and so forth, I come to the conclusion, my own personal conclusion, that the insider board, or excuse me, an outsider board creates added complexity in several ways. And so the key question we have is the added complexity, does it add enough value to warrant the additional complexity? My first impression is no, but it's obviously, I'm just looking at this the first time like most everybody else. So I think I would personally lean towards pursuing an insider board type approach. I guess the question comes, that also presumes that we're going with the not-for-profit public benefit corporation rather than the LLC. Is that an assumption then that we're ready to make, or do we need to make that decision before we go too far down the path of talking about an insider board? I'll stop there.
Chuck, thanks, Chuck. That's those are good points. I think, to my mind, we come to that point on LLC or public benefit next. There may be an implication of an insider board driving one solution over another. I haven't taken that to be the case at this stage. So I think my understanding is we talk at least semi-independently on LLC versus public benefit corporation next, and we should move on to that in relative short order. Second.
Hello?
Second point to the SEPON deals with life up to the point of potential separation. What it doesn't do is say what happens at or post-separation, including to the board. So to my mind, there's a ring-fenced separate problem to do with separation, which we need to come to still. So, yeah, those are the thoughts. And I know Milton's been keen to have a voice for some time, so let's hope we can hear Milton.
Yes, can you hear me now? Hello?
I hear you loud and clear, Milton.
Okay. So, yeah, I think we are really rushing to judgment on the... I don't think the issue is entirely insider versus outsider board. I could be comfortable with a board that was, in some sense, appointed by ICANN, but I don't think we're understanding the point of the separation, which is that the PTI would be governed primarily by contract. And the idea that minor problems with PTI or even major problems with PTI would be handled by accountability pressures on the entire ICANN board, which spends 95% of its time and energy on policy, just seems to me to be not a very well thought out concept. You want an independent board of PTI, not independent in the sense that it can refuse to implement community policies, not independent in the sense that it could, you know, fight against what they're supposed to be doing by contract, but independent in the sense that you've separated out the responsibility for the performance of the IANA functions to some degree, and that you are controlling it primarily through, you know, the SLA and the contract. And that's actually much simpler than having a bunch of new mechanisms for appointing or removing board members, or asking the entire community to try to remove, you know, six board members from the NOMCOM or the GNSO to handle some problem in IANA. I'm just not getting the the point here about how we get something simpler by having the PTI be entirely a creature of the ICANN board.
I'm going to respond to that. I know Sharon's put up her hand, and I'm going to let her respond to that before we go back to the queue. I don't see it in that way. I think the board, the ICANN board, is, to all intents and purposes, very distant from the PTI in my reading of the situation. There are numerous ways in which the IANA, the PTI, is held to account to perform. One, it's simply run, we trust, at least initially, by a professional competent staff who are managed by professional competent ICANN managers who are themselves supervised and held to account on SLEs by a customer-focused CSC, and who are themselves all subject to IANA functions review. So it feels to me those are just examples of some, but I worry, I think that the ICANN board is very distant from all of this, and it's only in some dream scenario where the CSC's failed to get what it wants, the management has failed to perform as they should, a number of dominoes have fallen over, at which finally we invoke these new accountability principles that say, enough is enough. We've really got to escalate this to the ICANN board. So perhaps we're talking at cross purposes, but I thought it helped to intervene at that point to clarify. That's certainly my understanding of where we're at, and I don't know if that's a satisfactory response, but I should certainly let others come in the queue, and Sharon also respond there as well. So let me hand over to Sharon, and then I'll come to you, Alan and Greg.
Thanks, Jonathan. In terms of the contract, I agree with Milton that there is a lot that can be put into the contract, and I think we will, you know, put as much as we could into the contract to govern the relationship between ICANN and PTI. But at some point, there is a need for some governance body to act. So, for example, you can have a contract that has all kinds of remedies, but someone, some individual or group of individuals needs to decide to enforce, for example. And so the contract can do a lot, but it can't do everything. And so at any point under the contract where decisions need to be made or discretion has to be exercised, there has to be somebody that's capable of exercising that discretion.
But of course that's ICANN, isn't it? I mean, ICANN enforces its own contract.
Well, but what if ICANN is in breach and PTI is saying, you know, ICANN's not performing, we need to hold them accountable and we want to sue. That example. Who makes that decision? There has to be somebody to make that decision.
What would PTI sue ICANN for? I'm not understanding
well,
that.
For example, let's say that the contract provides a requirement for funding. You know that
okay payment.
ICANN
yeah.
Needs
okay.
To fund PTI, and ICANN stops funding. Now you can deal with that through the ICANN at the ICANN level because there's a budget and it's approved, and ICANN wouldn't be living up to that budget either. But you would want, usually you'd want the party to the contract, PTI, to have some ability to enforce.
Right, and if it's independent board, it has that.
Yeah, that's...
If they're not getting paid, they're going to be very motivated to sue. If they're just put there by ICANN and ICANN isn't paying them, I don't see the motivation for them to do something.
My point, though, was that the idea that the contract can kind of be the place where everything is answered. I don't think it can be. I think at some point you need somebody, and then you can talk about what does that body look like. But it can't be the end all, be all. I think it should have as much as possible to avoid any need for exercise of discretion. But there will be some moments when discretion will have to be exercised.
I will shut up after this. I promise. But I think if yeah, of course the contract doesn't govern everything. But if PTI is in breach, then ICANN enforces based on ICANN's board. And if ICANN is in breach, then PTI enforces based on its board. And I don't see the need for ICANN to be in control completely of the PTI board.
Okay, so thanks, Milton. I'm conscious we could move to the others in the queue, but
come back in the queue if you'd like to. Just noting one other point, which has been mentioned a couple of times, and that's the prospect of having, whilst it an insider board could have others on the board, but it is still not, the insider board is defined by ICANN controlling or designating the majority of board members. Alan Greenberg.
Thank you very much. First of all, just in listening to this discussion, it strikes me that the one real anomaly is if there would be a situation where PTI would want to sue ICANN, then you have a situation where the suit is essentially taken by ICANN employees against their parent. And that one, you know, is one that doesn't quite hold water. But I'm also having trouble identifying exactly what the details of that kind of suit are. My question was, as you were looking at an insider versus an outsider board, were you looking at, and this was just inferred to a little bit or implied a little bit, are you looking at including either as board members or as liaisons representatives of the direct customers so that if there is a problem, the discussion on the board can actually be informed directly instead of doing everything, you know, with documents tossed to it or other secondhand information?
Sorry, Sharon, would you like to try and answer that question directly?
Yes.
So, thanks, Alan. Is the question who would be on the board? I mean, was that the question?
Well, it's partly who would be on the board. Obviously, the direct customers could not have votes and be the majority of the board, or it's no longer an insider board. But have you looked at that as partially to address? I'm not sure it would address the issues Milton was raising, but at least it also has a component of the alternative of the outsider board. Who likely in our environment would have been at the very least include representatives of the customers and you know, maybe a larger multi-stakeholder component as well. It also strikes me that if we end up with a scenario where the addressing and protocol people have a direct relationship with PTI, that is, they actually sign their memorandum of understanding with PTI, and as opposed to with ICANN and pass-through,